This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello everybody, welcome back to another episode of Code in the Unknown. Today we're talking about the ghost ship, the Octavius. How exciting. Ghost ships, no ghosts. Well, maybe there will be. Maybe this will be the episode where I'm like, oh yeah, ghosts are real and they're on the Octavius. I mean, probably not if you've been here before. Doesn't often happen. I don't think it's happened yet. The only one where it's come reasonably close, I was like, oh, there's something fishy about the JFK assassination. And how many hundreds of episodes have we done? Never mind. Anyway, the format of the show, Katie. Thank you, Katie, has written me the script. I'm going to read it. Let's jump in. The seas have always been a dangerous place, whether it's legends of the Kraken. Kraken? Kraken? Kraken. Right? From Lovecraft? Kraken? I've never read any Lovecraft, but even if I had, would I know how to pronounce it? I always come back to that amazing thing in The Simpsons, where Marge Simpson says, "Run like the wind!" And someone's like, "What?" And she's like, "Well, I've only ever read it." It's like, yeah, wind and wind. Same thing. Sorry, I'm already on a tangent. Let's get back into it. Romanticized pirates to modern pirates, weird phenomena like sea spouts and sea quakes to rough seas and howling winds. It seems like the chances of getting anywhere, bobbing along on the top of a mind-boggling depth of salty water, would be slim to none. But of course, we know that's not true. So, another tangent. I'm really sorry. We'll actually get into the content, I do promise. One of my fears, you know, people have just like random fears of stuff. My fear is deep water. I think if I had to choose one thing I was afraid of, like, yeah, you know, I'm uncomfortable with heights. Like, if you're at the top of a big building and you're looking over the edge, you're like, oh, we're really high up. But I think that's more just like rational fear of being high up. Like, but irrationally, if I'm in the sea and I don't know how deep it is, I'm just scared because I'm like, it's really far down. It's really far down there. And I don't know why. I'm a pretty good swimmer. Like, I'm not going to drown. And it doesn't matter if I'm in a pool or if I'm in the sea, if I can't touch the bottom, does it? So, yeah, I don't know why I'm afraid of the sea. Like, deep sea. Travel by water is pretty safe, and back in the day it was the only way for people to get to other parts of the world, so it had to be done. While strange things do happen at sea, well, probably I can't think of anything recent off the top of my head, it's the eerie stories from earlier centuries that stay in the collective memory to act as cautionary tales or just give us the creeps. Thank you, my fellow basement dweller, Emma Frayling, for suggesting this topic, although it did come at the cost of my last remaining Coco Pop. Wait, how can you have one Coco Pop? Aren't Coco Pops plural, like Coco Pops? It's a cereal, isn't it? I remember when I was a kid, they tried renaming it Choco Krispies for some reason, and no one liked that, so they changed it back to Coco Pops. And I think it might have just been a marketing thing overall, but all of the boxes changed to Choco Krispies for a while, which just seems like a terrible name. Especially because you've got an established... It'd be like Coke changing their name to, like, I don't know, something completely different. Like caramel-flavored beverage. Why would you do that? We covered the story of the Mary Celeste a while back in the early days of this channel, and here's another story for you that's even more chilling. The Ghost Ship Octavius. That was a joke, by the way. You don't even know it. Although you don't even know it yet. Anchors away. Okay. I don't know the joke. I guess we'll get there. Dead in the water. In October 1775, the whaling ship Herald was off the west coast of Greenland, probably harpooning some poor old whales or something, when it caught sight of a three-masted ship sailing in a sorry state of disrepair. Seeing nobody on board, they thought it was abandoned. So a party from the Herald went over to see if there was anything useful to nick. Once on board, what they now saw was the Octavius. However, things took a macabre turn. While there wasn't anyone on the top deck of the ship, once they went below, a horrifying sight met their eyes. The ship's entire crew of 28 was dead, and not just dead, they were frozen solid, lying or sitting as if they were just waiting for the other men to discover them. Well, yeah, they're near Greenland. Greenland's ironically much more icy than Iceland. So it's going to be below freezing out there, right? So they would be frozen. Looking into the captain's quarters, the crew from the Herald found another crew member frozen with a tinderbox in his hand. The captain's wife and child were snuggled in a blanket together, also frozen stiff. Oh no. Oh yeah, it's the past. They'd be on these ships for a really long time, so their families would go with them, which is kind of like crazy. I didn't realize how crazy it was when I was a kid watching Star Trek The Next Generation. You seen that one? Where they're all on this giant spaceship, and I think there's like 1,000 of them or something on board the Enterprise. How many people are on board the Enterprise? 1,500 is the number that comes to mind, but that seems really big. And they're off exploring the galaxy and whatnot. And their families are there. People have their families on board. And like every week, the ship's getting attacked by like the Borg or the Klingons or some shit. And you're like, oh, for fuck, this seems exceptionally irresponsible. And sitting at the desk next to them was the captain himself, frozen in the act of writing in the logbook. Wait, I assumed like they were sitting and in their beds and like they died there and then they were frozen later. But were they frozen while actually in the middle of things? That's not how it works. Nothing gets that cold. I mean, like liquid nitrogen and stuff, but then that not naturally. Totally freaked out, the men from the Herald rushed back to their whaler, but not without first grabbing the logbook from the captain's cold, dead hands. In their haste, and in its fragile state, the middle pages fell out, leaving just the few first and last pages attached to the binding. When the men got back to the Herald and took a look at the final entries in the log, they were shocked to see the last location of the Octavius had been noted as about 250 miles north of Utqiagvik in Alaska. Sorry about that name, Simon, just do the best you can. That's what I did. Would I look it up? Absolutely not. Anyway, can ChatGPT do pronunciations? Yo, ChatGPT, what's good? I want to spell out a name for you, and I want you to pronounce it, okay? Because I don't know how to pronounce it. It's spelt U-T-Q-I-A-G-V-I-K. It's a place in Alaska. How do I pronounce that, please?
Sorry, I'm having issues right now. Our systems are experiencing heavy load. Please try again later.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. Thanks anyway, ChatGPT. It's very near somewhere called Point Barrow, which maybe I should have gone with first. Yes, maybe you should have. Anyway, the Octavius was found by the Herald in a location off Greenland, meaning that the poor Octavius had seemingly managed to traverse the Northwest Passage, a feat not carried out by any previous ship due to the treacherous nature of the route. Unfortunately, however, none of the crew had been alive to congratulate themselves on this feat. If that wasn't sad enough, the captain's final entry had been dated November 1762, which meant that the crew had been dead and trapped on the slowly decaying ship for just under 13 years. Oh my lord. The crew from the Herald were happy to get the heck away from the Octavius, which eventually drifted out of view, never to be seen again. So, that's the story. Do you get my joke now? I already forgot what the joke was. I said it was chilling and they were all frozen to death. Oh, ha ha ha! Hilarious! Okay, it's not really funny, but it's a pretty weird story. Even more so when you come across things like the Express newspaper calling it a very real vessel with a very real crew. Adding to the believability of the Express, a newspaper that's known for very real facts. It's the Express, it's not that great. Adding to the believability of the ship is that we actually know more of its backstory. It was a British cargo schooner built in the mid-18th century, and it set sail for China in 1761 with the captain, his wife, son, and a full crew aboard. Having made it to China using tried and tested routes, the Octavius was loaded up with new cargo to bring back home. The captain had noted that the weather had been unseasonably warm for the time of year and decided to take a chance and sail back through the shorter Northwest Passage route, banking on the fact that the warmer temps would mean no sea ice. He was wrong. Wait, but no one's ever done this before, right? You'd be like, yeah, let's go through the Northwest Passage. It's like, yeah, but no one's ever been through the Northwest Passage. I mean, you got your wife and son there. What the fuck? Be like, no, 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 we'll take the safe and long way, thank you. No one's in that much of a hurry. The ship went tootling off into an area of unforgiving sea ice, icebergs, and literally uncharted territory, so it didn't take long for the inevitable to happen. While most articles I read merely called the occupants of the Octavius frozen or frozen solid, at least one piece said that they were encased in ice, which is a lot more frozen than I had originally been picturing. As practically every article I read on this presented it as a real event, let's start with a bit of decoding from another angle and see if we can work out how these people came to be frozen, seemingly in mid-action. Shiver me timbers. I have a feeling that they weren't frozen in mid-action, and I think there's not going to really be much to back this up. It's one thing happening upon a body that has succumbed to the freezing temperatures out in the open somewhere. It's another to find 30 or so people seemingly flash frozen in situ. Yeah, that's exactly where I took hesitated. Because I was like, well, it's normal. They're freezing. It's freezing outside. They died, and then they got frozen. But they're mid-action? That's different. While I doubt all the bodies were encased in ice, as historydefines.net said, it's a major point of the story that the captain and crew looked to have been frozen in the process of doing something. Not just that they all eventually died of hypothermia after running out of rations or whatever. If they had all died of hypothermia, you'd maybe expect some other sort of final tableau to be in place that told more of the story. Not everyone would have died at the same time. Some might have been on deck rather than everyone being below. There may have been evidence of cannibalism if food had run out, etc. If the Octavius had gotten stuck in some ice, surely the captain would have written about it in the logbook. As it stands, the last entry he wrote was when the ship was somewhere near the entrance of the Northwest Passage, and then he appears to have died around the time of writing or when sitting down to write the next entry. Either way, in normal circumstances, getting trapped in the ice doesn't immediately kill you, so he should have made some sort of note to his predicament. Did something bizarre happen so fast that he was struck down mid-thought? Now, if you're thinking aliens with some sort of freezing death ray, at this point, I was too. It seems an obvious answer. However, there's no real paranormal angle to this story, at least according to the articles I read. Oh, no! Wait, so we're actually having an episode of Decoding Unknown where someone doesn't think, where aliens don't even come up? Wow! Holy shit! That's rare! Is it even possible that a ship or its occupants could be flash frozen? I had heard some tell of mammoths apparently frozen while in the process of eating grass, so went down that rabbit hole to get further information. If it could happen to large hairy mammals, why not 30 or so smaller and much less hairy mammals? Well, it turns out the whole mammoth thing might be a bit of a red herring. Yeah, it does seem impossible for like something that big to just be flash frozen naturally. Even if someone poured liquid nitrogen onto you really quickly, like in, isn't it in that James Bond film where Boris is like twisting his pen or whatever and he gets frozen like mid-step? And is it GoldenEye? Is that Gold? I think it is GoldenEye. But I don't think that's realistic. I think if you're getting liquid nitrogen poured on you, you'd be like, ah! And then frozen in some sort of grotesque movement. If it's ringing a bell, that may be because it's a story still perpetuated in the media and movies such as 2004's The Day After Tomorrow. Why else it was GoldenEye? Oh, no, I'm sorry, that's a different movie. The Day After Tomorrow is the one with John Cusack, isn't it? I'm thinking, what's the James Bond movie that's called, like, The Day After Tomorrow Never Dies? Okay, yeah, I was just getting confused. I think it is GoldenEye. I don't remember this in The Day After Tomorrow, although I do remember quite liking that movie. At one point, some of the cast is in the Natural History Museum in New York and sees an exhibition about mammoths. They see, the body of this mammoth was found perfectly preserved in the Siberian tundra with food still in its mouth and stomach, indicating that it froze instantly while grazing. Let me just note here that this is not a real exhibit, and the museum in New York is called the American Museum of Natural History. So no, you can't go and see this particular exhibit as it does not exist. Going back to 1960, Ivan T. Sanderson wrote an article in the Saturday Evening Post about flash frozen mammoths, mentioning upon the tongue and between the teeth were portions of the animal's last meal, which for some incomprehensible reason it had not had time to swallow. The whole article gave the impression that the mammoth had been gaily chomping on buttercups, got flash frozen and killed over right there and then, buttercups still in mouth. Could a sudden pole shift or other kind of ice age event have done this? And could this also explain the deaths on the Octavius? Sorry people, but no. Well, of course it's not impossible for something, for this mammoth to die with food in, to be frozen with food in its mouth. It's like, let's say it's chewing on this like buttercups or whatever, like munch, 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 and then it just dies of like, I don't know, fucking heart attack or whatever, and falls over. And then it's in the ice, so it gets frozen. It's gonna have food in its mouth. It doesn't mean it was instantly frozen, and that's what killed it. As per usual, in this case, Ivan T. Sanderson decided to take someone else's research and leave out salient bits of information, or, you know, just change them to say something a bit more splashy for the Saturday Evening Post. Author Jason Colavito did some digging on this and found the original source for the whole buttercups in the mouth thing. In Dr. Otto Hertz's original report about the dead mammoth, he had basically said that the animal had eaten some stuff, then promptly fell off a cliff or down a slope and died, exactly like my heart attack theory. The body had then later frozen at some point. It's obvious. As you can see, this is hardly the same thing as being flash frozen while you eat, but it didn't stop Sanderson from just pulling out the bits he liked best. Also, it's true that mammoths have been found with food still in their stomachs, maybe indicating a sudden death, but due to mundane digestive facts about mammoths, this is not actually all that unusual and does not necessarily point to being zapped in the middle of lunch. Yeah, I'm sure plenty of humans die with food in their tummies. Unless you're like really hungry, then and die when you're really hungry, then you're gonna have food in there. I've seen loads of CSI episodes where they cut open someone's body and look in the stomach and it's like, ooh, their last meal was a prawn sandwich. It's not rocket science, is it, guys? I saw a suggestion on a Reddit post about this story that talked about sudden temperature drops being the reason for the freezing of the Octavius, and also a link to a Wikipedia page about the Little Ice Age, which encompasses the time period that the Octavius was floating about full of human ice cubes. Sure. But also no. Again, this Little Ice Age was, while really a thing, was not a sudden freeze. No one can even agree when it began, with dates given from the middle of the 13th century all the way through to the 17th century. It ended sometime between the end of the 19th and the middle of the 20th century. So yes, that encompasses a long time through which many ships have sailed the same area, and none of them are coming to death by insta-freeze. So basically, I'm thinking that this part of the story is an exaggeration at best. Yeah, totally, I just think they came on and there were a bunch of frozen bodies. And maybe some of them looked like they were in the process of doing things, but really, they probably weren't. What are the odds? If you're thinking this is nothing but a spooky maritime tale, think again. An article in the Republican Advocate carried the following story, which is dated as happening in 1775, to the captain of a whaler coming across a derelict-looking ship. There's a lengthy quote here, so here we go. He hailed her crew several times, but no answer was returned. Previous to stepping on board, an open porthole near the main chains caught his eye, and on looking into it, he perceived a man reclining back in a chair, with writing materials on a table before him, but the feebleness of the light made everything very indistinct. The party went upon deck, and having removed the hatchway, which they found closed, they descended to the cabin. They first came to the apartment, which Captain Warrens viewed through the porthole. A tremor seized him as he entered it. Its inmate retained his former position, and seemed to be insensible to strangers. He was found to be a corpse, and a green damp mold had covered his cheeks and forehead and veiled his open eyeballs. He had a pen in his hand, and a logbook lay before him. The last sentence, in whose unfinished page, ran thus. November 14th, 1762. We have now been enclosed in the ice 17 days. The fire went out yesterday, and our master has been trying ever since to kindle it again without success. His wife died this morning. There is no relief. Captain Warrens and his seamen hurried from the spot without uttering a word. On entering the principal cabin, the first object that attracted their attention was the dead body of a female reclining on a bed in an attitude of deep interest and attention. Her countenance retained the freshness of life, and a contraction of the limb shewed that her form was inanimate. Seated on the floor was the corpse of an apparently young man, holding a steel in one hand and a flint in the other, as if in the act of striking fire upon some tinder which lay beside him. In the forepart of the vessel, several sailors were found lying in their berths, and the body of a boy was crouched at the bottom of the gangway stairs. Neither provisions for fuel could be discovered anywhere. But Captain Warrens was prevented by the superstitious prejudices of his seamen from examining the vessel as minutely as he wished to have done. He therefore carried away the logbook already mentioned and returned to his own ship and immediately steered to the southward, deeply impressed with the awful example which he had just witnessed of the danger of navigating polar seas in high northern attitudes. Okay, the quote. Long quote, it's done. First off, I'm still giggling at superstitious prejudices of his seamen. I didn't even giggle at that first time around, but now I am. But doesn't this sound exactly like the Octavius story? Wait, I thought this was the Octavius story. This was just a random other whaling boat? Okay. Oh, you did say that, Katie. I'm sorry, I didn't pick up on that. This does sound exactly like the Octavius thing. I mean, apart from the moldy eyeballs bit. And what's with the sexualizing of a frozen dead woman? Wait, do they sexualize her? Her countenance retained the freshness of life. I don't think that's sexualizing, is it? The man had moldy eyeballs, and she was reclining on a bed, looking all fresh and whatnot. Ugh. I don't know. I personally don't read it that way. Maybe she just didn't have a moldy face, because maybe mold just didn't get to her face, and so they're like, her face is less moldy. I don't think that's sexualized, necessarily. What do I know? So anyway, could this have been a real boat? This particular article was published in New York's Republican Advocate, and the exact same article also appeared in the South Australian Register, but not until June 1847, meaning it came out 85 years after the events of the Octavius. Also, the name of the whaler was given as the Greenland, not the Herald. The unfortunate ghost ship is not named. It's possible that the whole incident was, in fact, real, but the boat was not actually called the Octavius, but rather Gloriana. So let's find out a bit more about that. Gloriana. Oh no. I've been using someone called David Meyer as a source and pictured him as a bespectacled academic with an interest in the weird. However, I just decided to click on the About Me section, and the very first thing he writes about himself is, I love Christ and seek to glorify him. Yeah, it's like when you come, like, if you're on Twitter and you click on someone's profile, it's like, first lover of Christ. I'm always like, I mean, okay, I get like you're into religion and stuff, but is that the first thing you want to put on your Twitter bio? Shit, I don't know what's on mine. It's probably like YouTube personality or some bullshit. Is that really the first thing? Well, no, it is the first thing I want to say about myself, because that's what my Twitter's about. It's not me as a person, it's me as a work person. Which is me as a person, but it's also not, you know what I mean? Luckily, I don't think religion has seeped its way into this particular tale. However, interestingly, when I was looking up all that mammoth stuff, many of the first results coming back were from creationist websites, and it was all going on about Noah's flood. I don't think that was really relevant to a ghost ship in the 18th century, so I decided to do a big old sidestep on that whole area. Anyway, but I was interested in the Octavius story and tried tracing it back as far as he could. He managed to find a reference in a volume from 1828 called The Ariel, a literary and critical gazette. This was a newspaper based in Philadelphia. In a piece titled The Dangers of Sailing in High Latitudes, it's basically the exact same story that we read out a moment ago. Superstitious seamen and all. As far as Meyer can tell, this was the original source, it then being reprinted in the other papers for shits and giggles almost 20 years later. There are a couple of minor differences, though. In the aerial piece, the whaler is not called Greenland, it's just from Greenland. But other than that, it's pretty much word for word. Meyer had previously found another reference to the story in a 1905 book called The Blue Adventure Book, a collection of stirring scenes and moving accidents from the world of adventure. In this book, there's a story called A Frozen Crew, which is an account given by Captain Warrens in the first person. Okay. It's not like academics don't write this shit in the first person, do they? Is The Blue Adventure Book trying to tell us something here? In this version, he gives the name of the stricken ship as Gloriana, saying, "For I had read the name in tall faded letters on her blistered stern." He also gives details of what exactly was in the logbook he wrestled from the cold, dead hands of the captain, which is almost exactly the same as the article in Ariel. Quote, "November the 11th, 1762. We have now been 17 days in the ice. The fire went out yesterday, and our master has been trying ever since to kindle it again without success. His wife died this," the writing ends in a scratch, as though the hand had dropped in the very act of wrestling with the frozen ink. The quote ends. Now, we're filling in a few more gaps. Warrens also holds this logbook up as proof of the whole affair, so can we conclude the Octavius is just the Gloriana under a different name? Well, not exactly. Yeah, this doesn't exactly scream like historical record, does it? Dead reckoning. Thanks to the work done by David Meyer, it seems the earliest reference to this story is from 1828. While this is pretty good, it's still 66 years away from the beginning of the end of the Octavius, which is consistently given as having happened in 1762. I tried doing a bit of detective work on whether the Octavius was actually a real ship or not, but came up empty. I was quite surprised to see some websites citing this as a real ship, as this story is about the only reference to it. I checked Lloyd's Register, which listed and grades ships starting in the 18th century, but annoyingly, its first register wasn't printed until 1764. Ah, 2 years after the Octavius got into trouble, just too late. Not every ship was registered in it anyway, but it was irritating that I couldn't check. There is also no other information given about the crew. The captain is never named, making it impossible to cross-check with anything. So, yes, there's not a huge amount of evidence that the Octavius ever existed. Okay, there's actually no evidence. So what about the Gloriana? Well, same deal. Its appearance in the Blue Adventure Book might have just been creative license, as the rest of the story is more or less the same as that from the Ariel and its various reprints, and the name didn't appear in either of those. It's also written in the first person, which gives it an exciting flair, but as it was published nearly 150 years after the story takes place, why hadn't it made an appearance in the historical record if it was Captain Warrens' actual first-hand account? Was it, I don't know, just made up? Yes, it was, in my opinion. Another slight difference in accounts I read is that while most mentioned the Octavius as drifting, some said that it was actually stuck in the ice when the whaler saw it. Not a huge discrepancy as these things go, but when there is not much in the way of primary sources, i.e. no confirmed primary sources, it's kind of weird that something like this diverges when it's looking like everything's coming from the same non-contemporary source. Well, I guess it would be weird if this was an actual true event, but I'm getting the feeling that maybe it wasn't. The logbook containing actual handwritten confirmation of the plight of the Octavius has also never surfaced, leaving this tale firmly in the realm of the unlikely. And speaking of unlikely, what about the entire journey the crew took post-mortem? The captain pegged them at a point off Alaska, and they were found 13 years later off the coast of Greenland. This means that, as no one had spotted them going the other way, they must have bumbled about in the Northwest Passage for over a decade. Is this likely? Well, no ship had ever made it through the passage at this point in time, as it was full of sea ice, icebergs, and rough waters. Sailors since at least the time of Columbus have been trying to use it as a trading route, but it was just not happening. It took the planning and experience of polar explorer Roald Amundsen to finally travel through it, and it took him almost 3 years, and it wasn't completed until 1906. Yeah, what are the odds? Like, if you've got a fully crewed ship that's awesome and like state-of-the-art and going on all these explorations forever, and everyone really wants to find this Northwest Passage, and no one can do it, and it's like, oh yeah, no, just a ship with a bunch of dead people and just floated merrily through like it was nothing. It's just like another thing why this is completely unrealistic. So I suppose an unprepared schooner entering treacherous water almost 150 years ago and quickly losing any manpower might spend years alternately being trapped in ice and bumbling its way along the channels to pop out at the other end a decade later. Maybe. Thar she blows. Okay, let's break this down like some tasty whale blubber, shall we? Was there an actual ship called the Octavius that traveled to China in 1761 or 1762? Unknown. Right, moving on. Did a ship called Octavius get flash frozen as it was entering the Northwest Passage in 1762? Probably not, because flash frozen's not a thing. If this event does have any basis in a real life event, it's far more likely that the crew died running out of food and water and then were frozen to death rather than being zapped by whatever the opposite of a microwave is. The captain, holding a pen, and another man trying to light a tinderbox are probably just embellishments, and I doubt all the people were individually encased in ice. They'd probably gone through several thaws and refreezes, and most likely did end up looking like the description Captain Warren's allegedly gave. Remember, damp mold had covered his cheeks and forehead and veiled his open eyeballs. Apart from the only lady, of course, who was reclining on a bed in an attitude of deep interest and attention. Sorry to tell you this, Captain Warrens, but if you're comparing a woman who's been lying dead for over 10 years with someone who you think is deeply interested in paying attention to what you're doing, maybe you're doing something wrong. Did a ship called the Octavius manage to traverse the Northwest Passage, therefore becoming the first ship to do so 144 years before the next successful trip? Again, if it was a real ship, it's unlikely, but maybe not totally impossible. Yeah, it's like, is it possible? Technically, yes. Is it likely? Not even remotely, no. Did a whaling ship find the Octavius and its dead crew? Probably not. The logbook has never been proven to exist, and the whaling ship has gone through several names over the years. The fact that the earliest found mention of this tale was in 1828 puts it 53 years after the whaler discovered the ghost ship. I'm pretty sure a sailor wouldn't have sat on a juicy story like this for long, and let's be honest, most of the whaling crew were likely to have been dead by the time the aerial story even came out, so weren't likely to have contributed to it. Captain Warren's first-hand account is given in the 20th century for the first time, and this is when the name Gloriana gets added. However, there is no more proof that this ship existed than the Octavius. I also have a bone to pick with the so-called logbook entry. In articles that quoted it, the captain bemoans the fact that they've been stuck for 17 days and the end is nigh. The last known location given, however, is pretty vast open waters way back before the start of the Northwest Passage. My beef is, what happened in between? Logbooks were pretty meticulous, I think, but we have no other locations mentioned. We can't blame the missing pages, as how do we know about the last location at all? How could the captain not have given a bit more detail between mentioning the location of what is now Point Barrow, and then suddenly it's apparently 17 days later and everybody's about to die? Methinks two slightly differing versions are rubbing against each other, and neither is coming off well. Well, it's what happens when a story's just completely made up. Like this story is. In the end, I think this is just a good old-fashioned scary sea story that got published one day and then popped up every few decades after, sometimes with details changed, but the main story staying the same. Of course, in all the tellings, the whaler hightailed it away from the doomed Octavius, leaving it to bob off on its own again, so who knows, maybe one day the ship and its extremely dead crew will emerge from the ice once more. Yes. Or not. And that's where we end today's episode. Thank you for being here. If you enjoy this show, why not leave it a rating on iTunes? It's not been called iTunes for years. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. And thanks for listening or watching if you're on YouTube. Hello there. And I'll see you next time.
Have you ever stumbled upon a story that's just too weird to be true? but too intriguing to ignore.
I'm Laura Anderson.
And I'm Tom Reynolds. Together, we're the hosts of Wanna Hear Something Weird?
A new podcast where we venture into the heart of mind-bending mysteries.
From peculiar legends to ghostly encounters, we try to separate fact from fiction.
Join us on a journey into the bizarre. Listen to Wanna Hear Something Weird wherever you get your podcasts.